Sets the tone for what the next day will be about. On one hand, the night is a continuation of the day, and whatever we were thinking about during the day continues naturally into the night. But it's important that a person, when night falls, reflect on the next day. Because once a person wakes up in the morning, there's already a mindset, and that mindset gets set by a person during their night, go to sleep with it when they go to sleep. Wake up with them when they wake up. That's why Friday night, Yom Tov night, is so important. And that's why Tisha B'Av night is so important. Beyond that, we read tonight in Eicha, Kumi Roni Balayla. That a person should Roni sing at night. Seems strange that we would be describing what we should do in Eicha as singing. Explanation is, Roni doesn't just mean singing happy, it could mean singing in other ways. The word kina we find in Tanakh to refer to a song. A song is an emotional expression. It should be an emotional expression. It can express joy, it can express sadness and longing. At nighttime is when a person is more in touch with their emotions, less in touch with everything else around them. Has the opportunity to be focused on oneself, to be focused inward. Kumi roni balayla. And therefore, as much as every night is important for every next day, for sure when the days are important, it's even more so on days that are of an emotional nature. And there shouldn't be a day where we're more emotional than Tisha B'Av. Because the emotion of longing is the most powerful emotion. There isn't a day where we need to seek as much emotion where it's as hard to get there. It's a lot easier to be happy on Purim than it is to mourn on Tisha B'Av. That's the very important avodah that we have the night of Tisha B'Av. It's interesting, another thing we said in Eicha tonight is Kara Alayim Away. Tisha B'Av is called a Yom Tov. Strange as it sounds, we know it'll be a Yom Tov in the future. But it has implications today as well. We don't say Tachnun, etc. There are elements of Yom Tov that we're supposed to be feeling on this day, the saddest day of mourning. I think we can understand that if we understand what exactly the mourning we're supposed to be feeling is. I think the most basic question about that morning cuts to the very heart of what we're mourning for. If you ask the average person who knows what Tisha B'Av is, what are we mourning for on Tisha B'Av? The answer is, we're mourning because of the Churban of the two Batei Mikdash. We're mourning for the loss of the Beit Mikdash. But of course we know that Tisha B'Av began before that. The nature of the day was set before that. And the things we mourn for on Tisha B'Av extend beyond that. We have the Harisha of the Har HaBayit, which can be seen as connected to the Beit Mikdash directly. But there are events that aren't connected to the Beit Mikdash. Destruction of Beitar doesn't get much discussion because it's not the Beis HaMikdash. The Galus from Eretz Yisrael, the other suffering, both then and since then. And the belief that this suffering connects to Tisha B'Av in some way. Many of the events on Tisha B'Av, and even events not on Tisha B'Av, connect to Tisha B'Av. The question is, what's the association? And the truth is, often within our tzibur, or the Jewish people, there are different people that resonate with different things. There's some people who speak about the Beis HaMikdash, right? Very firm people, the Beis HaMikdash. Other people, maybe people more connected to Eretz Yisrael as a vow, they speak about Galut, they speak about Jewish freedom, independence, not having to suffer, not having to be persecuted. And the question, of course, is what's the relationship? What's the relationship between the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, the son and daughter of Rabbi Yishmael, the burning of the Talmud, the Holocaust, and the Churban Beis HaMikdash? And the technical explanation of, well, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we went into Galus, and therefore we suffer, clearly doesn't encompass fully what's being said here. I think the beginning of the answer is going back to the beginning of Tisha B'Av. The first thing that happened on Tisha B'Av, the event that founded Tisha B'Av, the event because of which Tisha B'Av became the day when everything bad would happen in the future, of course, is the Cheil HaMeragim. Gemara in Ta'anit Daf Chof Tet says, "Yifku b'alayla," they cried in their tents that night. Rosh Baruch Hu said, "Atem b'chitem b'chiya shel chinam, ani yekva lachem b'chiya l'dorot." You cried for no reason. I'm going to be koveya this as a day of crying for all generations. And at first glance, at first hearing, it sounds like vindictiveness. Assistant principal. Oh yeah? You think you have a reason to cry? I'll give you a reason to cry. What's pshat? In Tehillim Kuvav, I recommend taking a look at it. It talks about the sins throughout the desert, their implications, l'dorot, mainly the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeragim, which Chazal connected very deeply between. For those who are familiar, it says there, "Vayimasu be'eretz chemda, lo shamu b'kol Hashem, vayirem yado la'apilotam b'goyim, v'lezarotam b'aratzim." The Chet HaMeragim is already the root of the galus in the future. Why, how? Why was there crying in Bichiya Shel Chinam so significant that it got said as a Bichiya L'Dorot? You know, we say Bichiya Shel Chinam, we use the word Chinam. Obviously, there was a reason why they were crying. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been crying. We say Sinat Chinam. Obviously, there's a reason people hate each other, or else they wouldn't hate each other. Say b'chiya shel chinam, we don't mean that they didn't have a reason. We meant that the reason wasn't a reason. Why wasn't it a reason? They were crying about their fears of Eretz Yisrael. Vayimasu be'eretz chemda. The land was good. They were crying because they feared that they wouldn't be successful at entering Eretz Yisrael and settling there. There was no basis for that crying. They had a Kadosh Baruch Hu, they had a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's absolutely no real reason to be crying. So why were they crying? Because there are times we don't appreciate what we have. A person gets onto a bus, gets onto an airplane, they start crying, "I don't have a ticket. Oh God, what am I going to do? How am I going to pay? I don't have money." But what if you have a ticket? So why would you be crying? It'd be silly to be crying. You have a ticket, you have money. Person who has ability, why should they be afraid? Why should they be crying? They have the ability to accomplish what they need to accomplish. Ve'en l'chadav yoter. You know, we don't have anything more significant than HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised to help you take you into Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, it's a pella. Remind me later, we'll speak about it more in depth. It's a pella. What were they thinking? It's not like us. We haven't seen what they saw. They saw Yetziat Mitzrayim. They saw Kriyat Yamsuf. They saw Mamad Har Sinai. They saw Mon, the bear. They saw unbelievable things. Did they think Hashem couldn't take the Kanani on? That's a mystic expression, we'll get to it later. The problem with the Chet HaMeragim was they were crying for no reason. Again, they had a reason, but it was no reason. So what do you do? What should Hashem do? Hashem's not trying to punish us. trying to fix things. And on a deeper level, the only way to fix things is galus. The only way to fix things is suffering. And not only is the only way to fix things, it's a natural outgrowth. Because if you don't appreciate the significance of having a relationship with Hashem, then you won't appreciate having a Beit Mikdash. And if you won't appreciate that, then obviously at some point it'll be destroyed. You don't appreciate something, it doesn't mean what it's supposed to mean. And the truth is, the only way for people to truly appreciate what they have is to not have it. The only way for the Jews to fully appreciate the significance of having Hashem at their back is to not have Hashem at their back. Even though God has chosen the Jewish people, and even though God ensures that the Jewish people continue forever through all kinds of things, the Galut is where God allows us to suffer. Where God doesn't prevent suffering. Atem b'chitem b'chiyah shel chinam. Tisha B'Av becomes the day when things happen because Hashem is allowing them to happen. And He's allowing them to happen so we can appreciate what we had and didn't appreciate on that first Tisha B'Av. And this is exactly the connection between the Churban Beit Mikdash and everything else. The Churban Beit Mikdash, caused by an indication of the fraying of our relationship with Hashem, the lack of appreciation for the relationship with Hashem, the lack of investment in our part in the relationship with Hashem, the lack of living our lives based on what that relationship should imply. And if the Churban would have happened in a vacuum, Beit Mikdash would be destroyed, and Jewish life would have continued in Eretz Yisrael. Or Jewish life would have continued in Galut in some normal way. We would not fully appreciate what the relationship with God or the fraying of that relationship means. We said, okay, it's a nice thing. It's either I have a relationship with God, or I have a relationship with God, Shkoyach, not Shkoyach. From the moment of the Churban, Jewish life becomes dysfunctional. Jewish life becomes dysfunctional. That's basically the summary of 2,000 years. Dysfunctionality. Unsustainability. Now, obviously we survive, but through unbelievable circumstances. And constantly being attacked, and constantly being persecuted. And a full day isn't enough time to tell the stories. And not just stories of normal suffering, but stories that don't make any sense in the natural course of order that these things should happen. And anyone who had any doubts, the Holocaust should have been the clarification of that. Jewish life is dysfunctional. And Hashem facilitates that for us to understand that there's something missing. That there's something that needs to be repaired in order to repair all of that. There's a machlokas, Sugya Rosh Hashanah Daf Yudches, regarding the pasuk in Zechariah, where he talks about the days of Tanit, one day being days of happiness, of celebration. Gemara says, when will they be days of celebration? Gemara says, Vizman Sheyesh Shalom. We've shown him what shalom means. A very diverse argument. Some say shalom means peace. The Jews will be back in Israel without any pressures on them. And some say that shalom means the rebuilding of the Beit Mikdash. Very diverse machlokes. nafkamina would obviously be if you have a Beit Mikdash without peace, or you have peace without a Beit Mikdash. It's interesting to note that most Rishonim mention both. And I believe the reason they mention both is because even though conceptually and theoretically they're two different things, they go very tightly together. And they go tightly together because that's the point. Everything that's happened since the Churban Beit Mikdash has happened because we're meant to understand the significance of having God at our back or not having God at our back. The more we appreciate that linkage, the closer we get to fixing it. And that's why Tisha B'Av is the right day to mourn all of Jewish suffering. And that's why as we get closer to Tisha B'Av, the Jewish people have to be careful. It's a bad luck time for the Jewish people. It's always a time of sorrow for the Jewish people, nationally or individually. Because it's the time period where God emphasizes His relationship with us by causing problems or allowing for problems because the relationship isn't right. And all this is hard for us to understand. And I want to explain why. If you sat in the Warsaw ghetto in 1942 and sat on the floor in Tisha B'Av if you had the ability to see God through the terrible suffering, you understood exactly what I'm talking about. If you sat so many Tisha B'Avs in so many places for thousands of years, you understood what I was talking about. But Baruch Hashem, we live at a time where even though there are challenges, the Jewish people have challenges, we don't have challenges like we had in the past. And Baruch Hashem, the Jewish people have some level of independence in the state of Israel. And that's why things aren't as bad, because things are being returned. And parallel to that, Jews are able to live. It's not perfect, not what it's meant to be. There's still anti-Semitism, but normal lives in Chutz Lartz. And there's a big danger in that. The danger in that is that Jews start to think that everything is where it needs to be. And the question is whether God, whether God's giving us the ability to return to Him physically, fools us into thinking that we've solved the Jewish problem without solving the relationship with Him, or whether it inspires us to realize that we're closer than we've been in so long. And it'll give us the encouragement to focus on the steps that are remaining. The situation with the state of Israel, it's a great pella. It's a pella no one can figure out. It's the problem the world can't solve. People used to talk about two problems, the IRA, which no one knows what it is today, the Irish Republican Army, and the issues that were going on in Northern Ireland, South Africa, people talked about, and Israel and the Palestinians. Who talks about the first two anymore? Jews have been trying to solve their problems for a long time. Many Jews thought, in the Middle Ages, that it's because Jews are separate and in ghettos and there's religious persecution and no, no, no. And then societies in Europe at the end of the 18th century became more secular, enlightened. Jews were allowed entry into society. The bulk of the Jews assimilated. And the hope was that this will put an end to the Jewish problem. We'll just be like everybody else. And the riots 100 years later, the end of the 19th century, and other stories in France, Dreyfus, etc., showed the Jews that assimilation wasn't going to work. And the truth is, Yechezkel had spoken about it thousands of years before. The attempt of Jews to try and solve their problems by assimilation. So then Herzl and others had another idea. If assimilation won't solve the Jewish problem, we'll take the Jews out of Europe, we'll go settle somewhere, nobody wants, nobody lives. So few people in Palestine at that time, it was unsustainable, the land was dysfunctional. We'll go back to Palestine. And that'll solve the Jewish problem. Didn't work. Suffering there too. The Jews in Israel said, initially, we'll beat the Arabs in wars, we'll show that we're strong, and that will bring peace. Didn't work. Then the other governments in Israel said, we'll give everything away, we'll show our willingness for peace. That didn't work. And now the truth is that the rational Israelis don't have a suggestion of how to fix it. And a big step towards reaching the real solutions are finally being able to see through solutions that aren't solutions. What's the explanation for Jewish dysfunctionality? What's the explanation for anti-Semitism? What's the explanation for our inability to fix the problem? How can we fix the problem? A sad thing, which I remember speaking about in 1992 and 1993 and 1994 and 1995 and 1996 and so on, through all these things, is that even though as a people we strive for peace, we need to realize we're not going to have peace. Not until the shalom beinenu levein aveinu shebashamayim. Because all the suffering comes through the fact that the relationship isn't what it needs to be. Through the Churban Beit Mikdash. As I mentioned last night, we have two mistaken approaches to fixing the problem. The first is to decide we don't have a problem. We don't need a Beit Mikdash. Everything's good. The version of this in Germany was, we're here, the Sheikhs arrived, the Gula, we're assimilating. The other approach today didn't work in Germany, but it works in America, or it works in Israel. We have a state, everything's fine. Such a sad, ironic reminder of how far we are from where we need to be on Tisha B'Av. That starting in Israel now is a protest for gay rights to adopt on Tisha B'Av. We have a state, everything's fine. The Beis Mikdash is a concept. We are Mashiach. And the other approach is, let's get out there and build the Beis Mikdash. Let's get permission from Trump. Let's go build. As if the problem is the lack of stones. As if the Beis Mikdash was destroyed because of geopolitical issues. Because all those things are more tangible and easier to fix than what we need to fix. Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'neshuva. Chadesh Shemeinu together. The understanding that the issue of the Beit Mikdash is much bigger than the issue of the Beit Mikdash. deeper, and it's the cause for all the implications, not the lack of a building, the lack of shalom. We read tonight Megillat Eicha, Eicha Asa Levadi, Eicha Yashva Vadad. Ha'ir Abat Yam Hayta Ka'almana Sarati Bamdinot. A nation that was proud, that was popular, that was part of the political scene. It's hard to imagine, but the Jewish state was once a normal regional power. You had the Egyptians, you had the Assyrians, you had the Jordanians, you had the Israelis. It's impossible for us to imagine that. Why is Israel the only pariah nation in the world? North Korea can be part of voting blocks. And of course, it's that word, that's the second word that connects to what Moshe mentioned in the Parsha Eicha Asa Levadi. The first and most significant point of Eicha, if you read through the first parak, is about the isolation. Ein l'menachem. There's no one who cares, there's no one to console. How could it be? How could it be that there's a people who nobody cares about positively? How can it be that there's a nation that people hate so much, that people don't want to get to know? Am levadad yishkon. Or as the Tocha says in the end of Parashat Ki Tavo, Hashem says, I'll take you back in boats to Mitzrayim. Aderech asher amarti lecha lo, tireo, the way I said you wouldn't see anymore. V'temakartem sham lo yivechem lavadim, you'll be sold as slaves to your enemies. V'yein koneh, but no one will want to buy you. Like the St. Louis, the boat that the Nazis sent around the world with Jewish refugees that nobody would take in. With no left wing calling for immigration rights. Not when it came to Jews. How could it be? How could it be? And of course, Eicha gives the answer. If Jews could find another home, they might find a home, some other place, some other identity, some other belonging, some other entity to care about them. God ensures that the Jews are pariahs. God ensures that Israel, that the Jewish people can't find a home. So that we know what relationship we need to restore. Not chas v'shalom to equate, but just so that we can understand it better. Imagine a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, they separate. Maybe one or both of them still have feelings for each other. It bothers them to see the other forge a relationship with somebody else. They hope they won't be able to forge a relationship with somebody else. That their relationship will still be intact, will still have potential. God ensures that we can't forge a relationship with anyone. Woe to us if we make the mistake. The mistake that's been made so many times when Jews weren't in Israel. Of thinking that we can fix the Jewish problem without fixing the Jewish problem. Woe to us if we misunderstand living in a time where Baruch Hashem, Jewish suffering is so much less. Woe to us if we make the mistake in thinking that our problems are solved. Woe to us if we force HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remind us that there are. In contrast, how responsible are we? How inexcusable is it to live in a time where we have so much more basis and so much more reason to believe in the vitality and the significance of our relationship with God. we don't appreciate or invest in it. It's understandable why someone sitting Tisha B'Av in the Warsaw Ghetto in 1942 might have lost his faith in the bigger picture. Not that he could possibly have had an explanation for why Jews are hated so much, but maybe just feeling that caused him to lose faith in everything. I have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sympathetic for people who went through that. What excuse do we have? Rav Elio Desta Michtav Melo writes, even though he wasn't a Tzioini, and he writes that what's going on in Israel is not at Chalta the Gula, he writes, but clearly it's the hand of Hashem. How can a person be blind to the great miracles God has brought for the Jewish people? He writes. And he says, Oylan miyom adin. If seeing these great miracles didn't inspire us to believe and invest in what we need to believe and invest in. That's true in general. That the miracles that the Jewish people have experienced should inspire us and get us to be better religious people. And particularly regarding Tisha B'Av, they should help us believe in our future. They should make it easier for us to yearn and to invest in this future because we're seeing the beginnings of it. It should make it easier to invest in. It should make it easier to mourn. Because we see the suit more clearly now. Because as opposed to our ancestors who didn't ever get to see Israel, who didn't ever get to see Yerushalayim, who didn't ever get to spend time there, who didn't get to see it in Jewish hands, we've done all three. We've gotten to see fulfillments of so many psukim in the Nevi'im. And to paraphrase Rabbi Akiva, who when he saw the suffering said, it gives me reason to believe also in the promises. We've seen so many of the promises. Shouldn't it give us more reason to believe in the rest? And to mourn for the fact that despite it all, we're not there. And to be able to yearn for it more. And to be able to cry more for the fact that we're not worthy enough to take it the last steps. Salvichik writes that Avelut initially is shock. The person's overcome, overwhelmed by sadness, by depression. There's an enlightened Avelus, a constructive Avelus. It's one that leads someone to think about how they can fix it. To appreciate that things happen because of who we are and who we aren't. And that we have the ability and therefore the responsibility to improve the situation by improving ourselves. The Rambam writes, the days of Taniyot are meant to be days of tshuva. Different things bring us to tshuva on each day. On Tisha B'Av, it's the Avelut that's supposed to bring us to tshuva. It's the mourning for what we've lost. It's the mourning for all the suffering that's come through the Mechiya Shel Chinam. In our times, it's the mourning for the terrible suffering of the Jewish people in recent years. It's the mourning for the fact that even as we return to Israel, there's so much suffering. And it's the sadness of her being so close but being so far. not make the mistake of allowing the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we benefit from in our times, of Jewish life that's so much better than so much of what we read about in the keynote, to deceive us into thinking that we don't have what to mourn for. To deceive us into thinking that our lives are what they should be. The core thing we're missing being the place we should have as a people in this world. The spiritual place we should have as a people in this world. Do not make the mistake of thinking that the Jews are just meant to be some people. That being able to work and make parnasa and have a family is what we're here for. And that's enough. Do not make that mistake in a way that we force Hashem to remind us that we're not what we need to be. As much as we believe all these things, how much do we get used to the lives we live? And all these great or higher ideals are slogans, not slogans we really actually believe. Not slogans the lack of which we can truly cry about. That Hashem shouldn't have to give us things that will make us cry. Because we can't cry over what we already miss and should feel enough to cry over. For us, it's not a b'chiya shel chinam. Because we cry over the fact that it's not what it needs to be. And if we think there's no reason to cry, we're asking Hashem to give us a reason to cry. It's critical, it's written in the poskim, that everyone bring themselves at some point over Tisha B'Av to cry. The first of the poskim to mention this is Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Alela ani bochia, shivchi chamayim libeich, he directs us, not just talking about himself. Lev is almost the same letter, the same gematria as Bechi. Because Shivchi Chamayim Libeich, tears are the water of the soul. That a person feels an emotion so strong, it expresses itself through the tears of one's eyes. A person isn't Mekayim Tisha B'Av properly if they can't get to a point where they feel so bad over what we lack, they can't cry over it. Things of far less significance lead us to cry. And again, just to clarify, we're not crying over the Holocaust. We're not crying over the Beit Mikdash. We're crying over our relationship with God, which all those things are results of. And of course we cry for the loss of human life. We cry for not having the vehicle of the Beit Mikdash. We cry for the dysfunctionality of Jewish life. But all that has to be a way of helping us appreciate and cry over the big one. Tisha B'Av is a moed. Tisha B'Av is a moed because moed means two things. It means a time, and let's say very much everything is a moed then. But the word also means a meeting. Ohel moed. V'no'adati l'chasham. And of course God is available to meet all of us anytime, anywhere. But Tisha B'Av is a day very appropriate for meeting. Because it's a day that if we reflect on properly what the avodah of reflection is, it's a day where we're meant to focus and truly appreciate what our relationship with God is and what our relationship with God is meant to be. And one day, when we appreciate it properly, and things are repaired, it'll be the day that symbolizes more than any other the strength and power of our relationship with God that we celebrate. And until then, it represents the strength and power of our relationship with God that's not there yet. And that we mourn over the loss of and yearn for the return to. Kara alai moed, Tisha B'Av is a moed. It's the moed. That starts when we had it and didn't appreciate it. That continues through the years that are implications out of our not appreciating it. And that one day will be the day we celebrate the fact that it's restored because we came to appreciate it. Tisha B'Av is a day of Avelut. That's why we don't speak to each other. But part of that also is the ability for a person to truly reflect for themselves. Think about who they are, what they believe, what's important to them. To be with oneself, kumi roni balayla. The more a person is with themselves, the more a person is close to God. The more a person is in tune with their identity, the more a person is in tune with their neshama, the more they can connect to, reflect upon, appreciate their relationship with God. Tisha B'Av is meant to be such a day. Tisha B'Av is a day laden with such meaning. We'll speak more in Yirtzeh Hashem. But to be Mekayim, the directive of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Kum Yironi Balayla. Let's make sure we can sing, we can internalize, we can express emotionally what we're supposed to be appreciating on Tisha B'Av. And the time for that appreciation, or for setting that mindset, which is the night. If we're able to do that at night, it's something in Yirtzeh Hashem will wake up, will go to sleep with, and wake up with in the morning, and be able to carry through the day. Tisha B'Av is one of those days that are meant to be formative in our consciousness as a people and as individuals who make up that people. Day to think about. Not only what we think about most of the year when we reflect on religion, which is my identity, my connection, my commitment, but to think about the bigger issue of what the Jewish people mean. The history, fate, and destiny of the Jewish people. What I believe about that. What I believe not only about that, but what I believe about me and us today and what our mission needs to be for tomorrow. that Beis HaMikdash for many people is a chalois. It's a, you know, there's a lulav, there's a sukkah, there's a Beis HaMikdash for you. Okay, we cry more for the lack of the Beis HaMikdash than we cry over not having a good esrog. To understand what the Churban Beis HaMikdash means. To understand the connection between the rotting of Jewish people in Beitar, the rotting of the Jewish national essence, how that connects with the Churban Beit Mikdash. And how the return to that is meant to be the beginning of something bigger. Not allow ourselves to make the mistake in thinking that the coming attractions of the movie. Each person should think to themselves, reflect to themselves, if it's while singing, if it's while walking around, looking at Shamayim, Tisha B'Av, you're not supposed to say hello to anyone. Part of that same thing. Tisha B'Av isn't a social day. It's an anti-social day. Because it's a day that we're supposed to be communicating with ourselves and with God through ourselves. And the hope is that if we can't communicate with anyone else, we might actually communicate with God. And our tradition has it that until Chatzos, we don't do anything else but this. Don't turn on your phone. Not tonight, not tomorrow. Just be with these emotions till Chatzos.
Alayla, anivo chiyo.
Menachem Eishim Nafshi Hayu V'alai Shomei Yemin Ki Gavar Oyei Oyei
Hey! Rafu nafsho al kedushat Hashem.
Baby, I'm a Shia Khalifa.